anymore. Great. Okay, so welcome back to the introduction to modern cryptography. What did we do last week? Last week, we first of all had in mind that the week before we have seen RSA CAM and the Diffie-Hellman-based CAM or the Algamal CAM, and that both of these constructions become insecure as soon as we have quantum adversaries. So we have seen Shor's algorithm as an example on a very, very, very high abstraction level that demonstrated that we can break with it the discrete logarithm problem, and we have seen before that if we can break the discrete logarithm problem, of course we also break the CDH problem and the DDH problem. Both of them are relevant, or one of them, the DDH problem in this case, is relevant for proving the security of the Algamal CAM. Or in any case, we can use a solver for the discrete logarithm to break the IND-CPA security of the Algamal CAM. And so there is a need for a stronger solution that is post-quantum secure. And this solution used the so-called learning with errors problem. At the end of last week's lecture, there was a quick question about why this thing is called learning with errors. There is a relation to some problems that are used in machine learning problems, and for that reason, for historic reasons, basically, this problem still is called the learning with errors problem. And based on that problem, we built LWE-based public key encryption. We came up with a construction, then we verified its correctness by demonstrating that it actually really maintains correctness under certain error conditions. So there can be errors, but the error probability can be made very, very small based on the parameters that one would choose. And then finally, after seeing all of that, we've had the security proof on a very high level sketch. That demonstrated that this LWE-based public key encryption is indeed IND-CPA secure. Okay, this is the overview of last week's lecture, and this basically ends the primitive level. So, the first half of the lecture was symmetric key cryptography, the second half of the lecture was asymmetric cryptography, and now we basically close that chapter and finally have some outlook. And today we do that by looking at secure channels. So secure channels are more of a protocol. So basic level symmetric cryptography, one level higher public key cryptography, and then protocols basically means that there is some interaction. So continuous interaction, reaction to something, maybe failure proof, systems, and so on. And secure channels is a very, very simple type of protocol for which I would still like to go into somewhat of the formal definitions and ideally, based on how far we come today, the construction. Okay, so secure channels. Fulfill the following simple problem. So, simple simple channel problem. We have two users, Alice and Bob. And as in the symmetric cryptography domain, we assume that those two users share a symmetric key. We have seen now with key encapsulation mechanisms that one way to share such a symmetric key is to basically let Alice encapsulate the symmetric key to Bob. There are more evolved protocols with stronger properties for sharing such a key authentically, called authenticated key exchange, and those authenticated key exchange protocols exist in the literature and will, as I said today in the exercise already, covered in the lecture course next semester, which is called Cryptographic Communication Protocols. In this course, we will tackle more complex protocols implemented in secure messengers. We will look at key exchange. We will also look at variants of those types of channel protocols and understand how the simple building blocks that we looked at in the now somewhat finalizing semester can be composed to build larger, interesting systems. Now, when Alice and Bob share such a symmetric key, they can use a send algorithm on input of that key together with a message. The output is a ciphertext, and then Bob can receive, using his key, the ciphertext, which yields the message. Then maybe Bob can send back using the same key and another message in prime. Again, ciphertext is sent back to Alice, and Alice can receive with her key or the same key the ciphertext C prime, which gives her this message. That's the overall idea. So instead of some encryption and decryption, we now have some send algorithm and receive algorithm. But there is more inputs and more outputs to that. So this is just a very, very simple high-level idea, because there can be many interesting security issues in practice. So let's collect those. So what could be possible security issues? So what could an attacker do if this would be our definition of a channel? What could the attacker do in order to change the meaning of what is communicated via the channel? What could an attacker do to learn something about the content? What could be possible issues if this would be our notion of a secure channel? Yeah.
Could maybe intercept the send algorithm and maybe just send the same subject again?
Okay, do you know a word for that that is more compact?
Replay
attacks. Very good. That's the first item on my list. Replay attacks. So the attacker can replay ciphertexts if this is the way we specify our algorithms. So basically what we see here is a form of symmetric encryption, and if we just use symmetric encryption to build a channel, then certainly the attacker can replay ciphertexts, which would mean that one of the two users would receive the same message twice. What are other forms of attacks that an attacker could perform against such a type of channel? Yes, please.
Block
a message, okay. So there is a 2 and there is a 3, and one of those is loss/block. What else can an attacker do? Yes, please. Okay, let's consider that this here is an authenticated, so the key can. The syntax allows for authentication. As long as Alice and Bob share a key, we can use authenticated encryption. So there could be some form of a MAC inside of that. So authentication could be preserved. But authentication only in the sense of message authentication. What could be done here as well in terms of authentication or breaking authentication?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the attacker could impersonate, that's the word for that. The attacker could impersonate one of the two users, but again, the attacker doesn't know the key. So as long as the attacker doesn't know the key and the attacker only sees ciphertexts, doesn't really work that the attacker could impersonate one of the two users. The assumption is that the symmetric key, which is gray here, is authentically distributed to Alice and Bob such that nobody else knows it, only Alice and Bob knows it. But what could the attacker do still to change the context or the meaning? Yes, please. Again, ciphertexts are authenticated in the sense that it is hard, so we can consider that these keys can be used also for message authentication. So basically, the send algorithm outputs a ciphertext that includes some kind of attack. This could be a problem, but not one of those that I'm searching for at the moment. But yeah, just so if we, for example, look at privacy and identifying who's communicating with whom and which frequency, then this is certainly an attack. But this is not one of the attacks that I would like to prevent today, so we don't look at that today. One thing that an attacker could do is seeing a ciphertext and sending it back to the sender. So reflection. This type of channel does not allow or does not prevent that that Alice would receive a message that she was sending herself as a message or a ciphertext that was sent by Bob. So reflection is one of those. And another attack that we haven't discussed yet is reordering. So this could be okay in some contexts, but in other contexts it might be pretty bad that an attacker can just reorder ciphertexts arbitrarily. A final thing, depending on how fast we are today, would be compromise of keys. So channel protocols typically last a very long time, depending on the context. If I connect to Wikipedia, it may just take me 5 minutes to look up what I'm searching for. But when I look at my Signal chats or my WhatsApp chats, those chats take a very long time. And if those chats would always use the same key material, then it could at some point happen that the attacker learns this key material. And so compromise of keys can also be an attack vector that would not be prevented by this type of syntax. Compromise of keys. And then we come back to what we've heard before. Under a compromise of keys, impersonation is again an issue. And also, confidentiality of past messages could be a problem. Okay, so this simple channel is not what is deployed in practice. Instead, what we would deploy in practice is something that we call a stateful channel, or typically we consider channels to be stateful. So in this case, we consider Alice and Bob. To first of all, have a shared key. And then using that shared key, abstractly, we assume that they run some initialization on that key. And that initialization gives them an initial state for Alice and an initial state for Bob. And again, they could execute this initialization algorithm locally, separately, but in order to ignore those initialization issues, which are also relevant, but not at the moment, to keep it simple, we just consider them to jointly execute an init algorithm that then outputs a state. And then Alice can send, using her state, a message that is sent to Bob, who can receive this ciphertext using his own state, which gives back the message. Then this updates the state. So after Alice sent something and after Bob received something, they will have updated their state. Maybe they updated only some nonces or some counters, but maybe they also updated some cryptographic key material. And then at some point, Bob could respond using his state with another message, which would result in another ciphertext that can then be received with Alice's updated state, such that Alice can receive that message. And this can continue forever and ever, such that the syntax that we define for such stateful channels consists of three algorithms, the first one being the init algorithm that outputs a state, send algorithm that on input of a state and a message outputs an updated state and a ciphertext, and the receive algorithm on input of the state and the ciphertext outputs also an updated state, the message, and maybe also two further information. First of all, a counter that we call the epoch, and the epoch counter is basically a symbol or a counter that corresponds to what was this response, or what was to which message was that is a response to. It makes sure that we have some form of causality in our channels. So when I send something to Bob and Bob responds to me, then I would like to know at which point did Bob actually respond to me. So what is the context of the message that I receive now from Bob, especially if both of us can send and receive simultaneously. Maybe there is a delay on the channel, maybe something has been dropped on the channel. I would like to know what is the context of the message, and for that reason, the output of the receive algorithm tells me the so-called epoch counter, and that epoch counter means that it tells the receiver to what the received message was a response to. We allow for a second counter to be output. And this second counter is more fine-grained. So maybe I send something to Bob, and then Bob responds to that. And so Bob tells me, this is the epoch counter. So this is a response to what you've just sent me. But after that, Bob may send many, many messages in that same epoch, so in response to the same message. But I still would like to know in which relation are these messages sent from Bob among each other. So maybe I first receive the second message and then the first message of Bob, and then if I receive those, I can put them back into context and understand what the causality between them is. So this is basically the send counter. That tells me how the things that are sent by the other party relate to each other. Those two counters are primarily relevant for channels in unreliable networks. What does that mean? So we have Alice and we have Bob. And an unreliable network, first of all, of course, allows Alice and Bob to send simultaneously, but maybe sometimes messages or ciphertexts are dropped on the network, and maybe sometimes a first ciphertext is received later than a second ciphertext, and simultaneously, again, something is sent back from Bob. So, this is the syntactic idea, yes, please? This is the syntactic idea of stateful channels that help us, and especially help the senders and receivers, to understand what is the context of messages and how have they been sent and received, yes? This requires that clocks are synchronized. And for that reason, so timestamps would be an option. And today we live in a world where time synchronization on a somewhat fine-grained scale is possible, but still not guaranteed. And for that reason, those two counters here are just counters. Yeah. And of course, I haven't looked at the state of the analysis of time protocols, but as far as I remember when I looked last time at those protocols, the security of those protocols is not very strong and relies on strong assumptions for those who synchronize the time with us. And so, yeah, those things here are counters, and these counters only have the context of the session between Alice and Bob, and for that reason they don't have to trust anybody outside their context. Okay, so this is the syntax. Doesn't look very complicated. The next step that we would define for defining security would be what? What are the five steps of defining security? We just had the syntax. What are the five steps of defining security? What is the second step?
Correctness.
So the second step that we would like to define for understanding what we have to do here, or what the idea of this primitive that we define is correctness. And we could write down some correctness term that says something like, we want that if everything is transmitted honestly between Alice and Bob in some order, then we would like that the messages received by both of them correspond to that order. This is complicated. We could define it via some probability term, but we could also define it via, especially for such complex primitives, via some game, and that makes things much easier. And for that reason, so we can write those things down, intuitively, we want that everything is received the way it was sent and forwarded. As long as forwarding was honest. We have seen this before, that correctness can be specified in some form of probability. But sometimes, especially as I said before, it makes sense to specify it as a game. And this is what we do here. So we define game correctness. And we could define again, we could define it in our boxes and arrows terms, but it makes it much easier here to define it as, or in pseudocode. So for defining the correctness of a channel, we define correctness game CORR for channel CH with adversary A. And in this game, we start initializing the channel between Alice and Bob by executing the init algorithm. Then we leave two lines blank for some bookkeeping. Then we invoke the adversary, and if everything worked out, we stop with zero. Now, in order to model what we want from correctness, we would like to give the adversary the ability to execute the algorithms of our channel. And for that, we provide two oracles. The first oracle that we give to the adversary is the send oracle that takes as inputs the party that should send as well as the message. And secondly, we give a corresponding receive oracle that again takes as input the party that should receive something and the ciphertext that is received. Those two oracles internally, of course, execute these algorithms for the parties. So the first thing that the send oracle does is executing the send algorithm on input of the state of the party P and the message, and the output to that or of that is the updated state P and the ciphertext. We again do a little bit of bookkeeping and then return the ciphertext C that the adversary can use in order to, for example, forward it to the receive oracle. The receive oracle then internally, of course, at first executes the receive algorithm and this receive algorithm takes as input the state of the party P and the ciphertext that is to be processed, and it outputs an updated state P, the received message, the epoch counter, and the counter that counts inside of an epoch. Or actually globally counts over all send operations of the sender. Okay, now let's introduce the bookkeeping. First of all, we count for party P how many messages it has sent so far. So every time the send oracle is queried, we just increment this counter NP such that we basically keep track of what has been sent or how many things have been sent before. And then we store for party P and the ciphertext that is being sent, that the message was that was encrypted in that ciphertext is message M, and we also store together with it the epoch counter and the send counter. For this, we introduce these variables in our corpus of the game. So we have some epoch counter A, epoch counter B, some send counter A and some send counter B. And we set all of them to 0. Furthermore, we set this array M to bot at all of its entries, and we introduce a set R to the empty set, and we will see in a couple of seconds what this R means. Okay, so this was the simple part. We let Alice send, we let Bob receive, we store which messages have been sent from Alice to Bob, and together with these messages, we store to which epoch these messages correspond to, and we store how many messages in the current, by this sender have been sent before. All right. Yes, please. Yeah, so epoch E, so epoch E of Alice, epoch E of Bob, N of E and N of A and N of Bob. So basically the two epoch counters and the two send counters, and all of them are set to 0. So 4 times 0. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Nice. All right, then. The next step is to check on the receiver side whether everything worked out. So the idea of defining a game for correctness is to actually check if an attacker that sees the ciphertext on the sender side and forwards some ciphertext, maybe those, maybe others, to the receiver, whether the underlying channel actually satisfies what we expect from it. So the first thing that we do in order to check whether correctness is preserved is to see what is stored for the ciphertext that is received. So we check in our array whether the ciphertext just received has been actually sent from the other party, and we remember ourselves what belongs to that ciphertext. So which message was encrypted in it, which epoch counter belongs to it, and which send counter belongs to it. Now we do a couple of checks. So we first of all check whether this thing has actually been stored. So is there some message that has been stored for that ciphertext? And if yes, has it been received or not? And this is the idea of this receive set. So has this epoch and the send counter ever been seen and received by the party that we look at the moment? And before we write down what we do here, let's quickly write down a meaning for this. So if slot E, N is still free, client C was sent by the communication partner, then we require correct receipt. So we first check, you don't see everything. So we first check if this thing that we just received has not been received before, and nothing for the slot that we consider at the moment has been received. And simultaneously, if this ciphertext that we consider at the moment has actually been sent by our communication partner, then we want that the receive algorithm actually outputs what we expect it to output. So the second check is if m, e, n differs from m prime, e prime, n prime, then something was wrong. So if this thing should have been received, but it is not received the way we expect it to be received, then the construction is not correct. For that reason, in this case, we stop with 1. And 1 in this case meaning that our construction is not correct. We have a second case that we now secondly look at, and that is if the message that has been received, so M, is actually a real message, so it hasn't been rejected by the receive algorithm, it has actually been accepted and it has been computed, and E, N have indeed not been received, then we update our bookkeeping. So if message is received, then the slot is filled. Which means that we update the set R by adding to this set E, N.
Could you please push the...
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah. And we also update the epoch. So the epoch that we sit in is the freshest thing that we have seen before. So the epoch of party P is the maximum epoch that has been seen by the receiver. And this basically corresponds to the send counter that the message that we just received belongs to on the sender side. So if Alice sends 3 messages, Bob receives all these 3 messages, then after receiving those 3 messages, Alice sent 3 messages, Bob received 3 messages, Bob is then in epoch 3. Now everything that Bob sends after that stays in epoch 3 until Bob receives something newer from Alice, which might be, I don't know, in epoch 5. If after that Bob receives something from epoch 4, this won't increase the epoch counter for Bob because this is old information. The epoch is always the freshest epoch that we talk about. Okay, and then eventually we return M-E-N. To the attacker. I just see now that we actually need two of those sets, one for each party. So we have RA, RB, and it should be RP here and also RP here and also RP here and RP here. Okay, so what does this game do now? It traces what has been sent, what has been received, and as soon as something is received, it does not need to be received again. But as long as something has not been received, and the attacker honestly forwards the ciphertext for the slot for which nothing has been received before, then we expect our construction to honestly and correctly decrypt and receive the message that has been sent by the other party. So we define our construction to be correct. Channel is correct if the probability of the game correct for our channel CH on input of the adversary equals 0 equals 1. Okay, so this is correctness. Any questions?
Just for the naming. On the initialization of the game, you explicitly mentioned A and B, that means Alice and Bob. And then the middle and the right, the index P is either one of them. It's just both roles.
Exactly. Yeah, P is either A or B, which basically means that in the game that we specify here, we consider Alice and Bob to symmetrically do those things. So there is not just a unidirectional communication channel, but it must be a bidirectional channel, and correctness has to hold in both directions at the same time.
It's just P takes the place of A and B.
Yeah, so let's write that down in some gray. That's a good comment, thank you. So P is in A or B. Thanks. Exactly. Okay. Now, next step for defining security is actually defining security. So for security, we again define a game. And we call this game IND for channel CH. And our IND game is typically some indistinguishability game that's parameterized by a challenge bit. And it also takes as input the adversary A. This game begins just as the correctness game with initializing the states of Alice and Bob. Then we do some bookkeeping that is not relevant yet. And at the end, the attacker outputs a guess for the challenge bit, and we stop by returning this guess bit B. We allow our attacker, and this is just a choice that we make, we allow our attacker to observe how these algorithms sending and receiving of the channel are executed again by providing oracles for that. So we give a send oracle that again takes the party P. And as for encryption, we would like to define that it should be hard for an attacker to see which message has been encrypted. So we give the attacker the ability to specify two messages, M0 and M1, and one of both is encrypted, but for this, we require that the length of these two messages is the same. Because otherwise, so we don't expect our send and receive algorithms, especially our channel in general, to hide the length of messages, because that makes it just inefficient. It would introduce some hiding padding. Then the next step is that the send oracle executes the send algorithm on input of the state P and the message B. And it outputs the updated state P and the ciphertext. And lastly, after some further lines that we will fill out in a couple of seconds, we return the ciphertext such that the attacker can actually see what it wants to attack. We also provide a receive oracle that takes as input a party and a ciphertext, so either Alice and Bob and the ciphertext, and it again starts with executing the receive algorithm that outputs the decrypted message, the epoch number, and the send counter from the sender on input of the state of party P and the ciphertext that is to be received. And it also updates the state of party P. We again have three lines to be filled in a couple of seconds, and then at the end we return the output of the receive algorithm. Included in what we see already, there are two components for defining security. Who remembers what that is? Two steps in defining security of the five. Which two are included here? Okay, so what are the two in here? So how do we encode the adversarial capabilities and the security goal?
The capabilities are the oracles that are provided, so sending and receiving in this case. Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. So the capabilities are encoded in this game by providing the attackers certain oracles, in this case, sending and receiving. So the attacker can observe sending or executions of the send algorithm. It can see the ciphertext. It can forward the ciphertext. It can alter the ciphertext, manipulate them, drop them, whatever, and then forward to the receive oracle the ciphertext that it wants to. So basically, do exactly those things, either manipulate them, ciphertext, and input them to the receive oracle, or drop them and never forward them, or reorder them, and so on and so forth. And so the attacker then sees again what is the output of this, can basically see the message, the epoch, and the send counter. This is the capabilities, and on the other side, we have the security goal, and the security goal here, first of all, abstractly, the security goal means that there is some hardness that we want to provide, or there is some security property that we want to encode. And the security property here is that it should be hard for an attacker to distinguish which of two messages have been encrypted. And for this reason, the send oracle allows the attacker to specify two different messages. The only limitation is that the length of these messages needs to be the same. Okay, what is the first step of defining security? Okay, and so for this, let's identify what the trivial attack is. So where do I get the ciphertext from? Okay, so first I need to specify a challenge. For that, I specify some first message M0 and some message M1 also from the message space except for M0 such that the length of the two messages is the same. Then I query the send oracle for party A on message M0 and M1. And then? And then I stop or I return. Let's write down stop with. Let's clear out. Stop with M0. Or let's do it that way. M prime equals M1. So this is an attack that is permitted at the moment, and in order to prevent this attack, we have to trace what has been given to the attacker. So if messages M0 and M1 differ, then I consider the ciphertext that is given to the attacker as a challenge, and then I store who sent that ciphertext. And then if the receiver actually receives a message and accepts that message, and the ciphertext that is just received has actually been sent by the communication partner, then I don't return the message. There is still one blank line. Why did I keep this line blank, and what would we want to fill in this line? Any ideas? Try to remember what type of attacks we've been talking about at the beginning of this lecture today. And try to think about what type of attacks are not prevented yet. Let's look at the list of attacks again. We looked at replay, reflection, reorder, lost block, compromise of keys. So compromise of keys, not relevant yet. We talk about this at the end of the lecture. In the setting that we look at the moment, we are fine with reordering. So it's perfectly fine if ciphertext is received later or earlier. We do have our epoch counter, we do have our send counter, and so basically when Bob receives something, he always knows where to put that message. It is clear to the receiver, correctness gives us that, and we will also specify some authentication in a couple of seconds. Reflection is also covered already, so at least in the setting that we look at the moment, we only silence the receive oracle if the ciphertext has actually been sent by the other party. If I take the ciphertext and put it to the RISO, if I let Alice output a ciphertext and put that ciphertext into the oracle receive for Alice, then we don't expect this to be a trivial winning approach. But there is something left. Which is replay attacks. So what would we need to input, or what would we need to write into the blank line in order to make sure that replay attacks stay harmless?
Also FPC, because then the receive oracle cannot be queried for the same parameters again, so it cannot receive the same message twice for the same recipient.
That would be the opposite of what I would like to have. So if you, so the proposal, the suggestion was, let's add PC to the set of ciphertexts, and the result would be that then the receive oracle can't be queried for that ciphertext anymore. But that would mean that we actually limit our attacker even further by neither letting the attacker send that ciphertext to Alice nor to Bob. What I would like to do here is I would like to give the adversary a little bit more freedom. So I don't want to limit the adversary further. I would actually like to relax our limitation a little bit. The solution that I'm looking for is that I update the ciphertext set by removing not P and C from this set, because what I expect my construction to do is if the receiver Bob receives this ciphertext, then I don't want that this receiving will be successful again. So if I send Bob the ciphertext once, I don't give the attacker the message. But if I send that ciphertext once more, then I allow the attacker to see the output message, because what I want is that my algorithm makes sure that after receiving it the first time, it shouldn't be successfully received a second time. Okay, so let's write something down about that. Yeah, that's a good comment. That's basically the opposite translation of what we would do in the construction. So in the construction, we want that it makes sure to receive something only once, and in our security game, we want to enforce that. So we want to make sure that the construction has to implement some form of replay protection, such that if the attacker can observe two times the receipt of a ciphertext by one party, then the second time it must be silenced. The construction must be sure that there is no valuable information on the second receipt. Okay, so what we want, this is the requirement, our channel must be secure against replay attacks. And the advantage term is the way that we are used to. It is the probability that the IND game on input of the challenge and challenge bit on input of, or for the channel CH on input of the challenge bit 0 with adversary 1, outputs 1 minus the same probability, only that the challenge bit is 1, equals 1, and then both of those things the absolute value. Okay, so this is confidentiality of the message that we see. We now turn to authenticity, because that's also a very important property. So far, we don't require that something is rejected that has been manipulated. We don't require that something is, we do require some form of those replay protection mechanisms, but only in the sense of confidentiality. So a replay attack must not leak anything about the content. So far, we don't require that it is rejected. For that reason, we define a second game, and we call this game auth for authentication or authenticity for our channel CH on input of the adversary A. And we begin the same way as we begin for correctness and indistinguishability or confidentiality. So we start with initializing the states, then we invoke the adversary, and if everything works out, nothing is bad, we stop with 0. Again, we allow the adversary to observe the execution of the two send and receive algorithms, so the attacker can ask either of the two parties to send some message M, and this is what is done. So the send algorithm is executed on input of the state P and the message M, which outputs the updated state and the ciphertext. We again do some bookkeeping and then return the ciphertext C. We have again a receive oracle that also starts with executing the receive algorithm. And the goal of this game is to detect and reward an adversary for coming up with a ciphertext that should not be receivable, but that is actually successfully received. So under some conditions, we want that the game stops with 1 if something bad happens. Sorry, I forgot the bookkeeping here. So again, we trace what has been sent the same way as we did it before, but now we do it for all the ciphertexts ever sent by each of the two parties. And then we check on the receiver side that if a message is successfully received and that's the crucial part, this ciphertext has never been sent by the other party, then we stop with one. So if the attacker is actually successful in producing a ciphertext that is successfully received and accepted, then the attacker wins, the game is over. Again, this already includes reflection attacks. So reflection must not be possible because, of course, we only add ciphertexts sent by ourselves, and we check that for ciphertexts sent by the other party when we receive. What is not yet captured here is, again, replay attacks. So how do we have to change the game such that it must be hard for the attacker to produce a ciphertext or let the sender produce a ciphertext such that a replay attack would, when it is successful, also be rewarded as being successful?
Again, we remove not PC from the set C.
Yeah.
So that calling the receive article again is the same parameters that needs to be prevented by rejecting the message output.
Exactly. Perfect. Thank you so much. So we update the ciphertext set of things that we consider to be receivable by removing things that are received from this set such that they are not considered to be receivable after that again. And so if something has been received once and it is sent to the receiver again, then the construction itself must make sure that it is rejected. If it is not rejected, then it is considered as an attack against authenticity. And as for all those type of games that cover some form of authenticity, the advantage term for channel CH in game authenticity for adversary A is just the probability that this game for channel CH and adversary A outputs one. Now, so far we have covered very many theoretical definitions, but we haven't looked at a construction yet. Interestingly, the construction, as you might have thought already, is very simple. So, not super simple, but at least in terms of what type of building blocks are needed, it is very simple. The main cryptographic building block, the only cryptographic building block that we need to build a secure channel, is an authenticated encryption scheme that consists of algorithms gen, eng, and deng. Then we define the three algorithms as follows. We generate a symmetric key, and this symmetric key is used for sending in both of the directions, from Alice to Bob and from Bob to Alice. And we specify the two states to contain the party, or the name, the role, the key, and some other information that we will specify in a couple of seconds. We do the same for Bob, so Bob's state also contains his own role or his own name, the key, and some other information, and then the init algorithm returns the state of Alice and the state of Bob. The send algorithm takes as input the state of one of the parties as well as a message, and it first parses the information from the state. The party name, the key, some further information, blah, 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 from the state, and I will write down the rest of that in a couple of seconds. The first important part is that both of the parties need to fulfill what we expected from them in terms of correctness, security, and security meaning confidentiality and authenticity. Correctness requires that the two parties, when receiving and sending something, know in which epoch they are and also how many things they have sent before. For that reason, the first thing that Alice and Bob have in their state, in addition to their own party, role, name, and the key, is an epoch counter and the send counter. So the first thing that the party does when sending is incrementing the send counter. Initially, these two counters are zero. Then after doing that, so after incrementing the send counter, Alice, or the party who sends, will execute the authenticated encryption algorithm on input of the key that is used for encryption or decryption. The message that is being encrypted, and as associated data, the party, so either Alice or Bob, the current epoch counter, and the send counter. And then the full ciphertext consists of this associated data or this context information, so the party role, the epoch counter, the send counter, and the actual cryptographic ciphertext. At the end, we update the state. We keep in the state the party role, the key, the epoch counter, and we just updated the send counter n, write that back to the state, and we return the state and the ciphertext. Okay, so the send algorithm is done. That is everything that the sender does. The most complicated part is now the receive algorithm. The receive algorithm takes as input the state and the ciphertext. And the first thing that is done, again, is to parse the state. That consists of the party, the key, the current epoch counter, the send counter, and some two further variables that we will specify in a second. Now, then we parse and split the ciphertext into its components. the components of the ciphertext were the party who sent that ciphertext, the epoch in which it was sent, the send counter at the moment of sending, as well as the cryptographic ciphertext. Now, in order to make sure that everything is fine, everything fits into the context and should be receivable, we first check, and this is this reflection thing, if the party that sent that is not the party, or is actually the party on the other side. If it is not the party on the other side, then we reject this ciphertext. But there are two further properties under which we reject that ciphertext. And for that, we introduce two further variables, n and nr. Just have to think for a second.
What's the second last line? That's inequality, or is
that? Yeah, it's an inequality. So P this year?
No, it falls to the right.
N prime less capital N. Yeah.
Less than.
Yeah, less than. So. Let me think for a second. So at least if either of those properties, I have to think about the semantics of this in a second. If either of that holds, we reject the ciphertext, and we reject the ciphertext, first of all, under the condition that the counterparty is not the one who sent that ciphertext. So the party that is indicated in the ciphertext P prime is not the role of the other party. Yes. And the other thing is that, so we count on our side the largest received send counter from the other party. And if the ciphertext belongs to a prior send counter, so a send counter that is older than the newest one, but it has already been received, then we don't want it to be received again. So we basically keep track of the things that have not been received. This is NR. And if it has already been received, but it is older than the newest send counter that we are aware of from the other party, then we reject it, because then it's basically a replay attack. Okay, so these are the logical cases under which we reject the ciphertext. Now we actually decrypt the ciphertext to get back the original message. For this, we take the key, the ciphertext, and the associated data, P prime, E prime, and n prime. And then we do our bookkeeping with these two new variables. So let's fill these two variables into the state of Alice and Bob in the send algorithm as well as in the initialization. So the newest send counter that we have received is 0 at the beginning, and initially there is no ciphertext that has not been received by either of the two parties. So the initial set and R is empty. Now, when we receive a ciphertext that is newer than the newest one that we know of, then we update the set of not yet received ciphertext. So while capital N is less than n prime, we increment capital N and we add to the set of not yet received ciphertexts capital N. To make sure that this makes sense, we then at the end remove the counter, the send counter for the ciphertext that we just received from the not yet received ciphertext space. In particular, for the case in which it is an old ciphertext, so we just remove it from that set. And then we update our epoch counter by being the maximum of the epoch counter at the moment and the send counter from the other party that we just received, and that is it. At the end, we set our state to be, again, the party role, the key, the updated epoch counter, this our own send counter, the maximum send counter from the other party, and the set of not received ciphertexts. We return the state, the message, the epoch counter, and the send counter from the other party. So this construction contains a lot of logic. It contains a little bit of cryptography, and still it gives us the properties, or based on that, it gives us the properties that we want. And so this is the theorem for all adversaries against IND security of the channel, respectively, auth security of the channel for this particular channel CH. There is an adversary B against IND CPA security and strong unforgeability under chosen message attacks against our authenticated encryption scheme such that the advantage in breaking the channel in the IND game is less equal the advantage in breaking the authenticated encryption scheme in the IND-CPA game. Plus the advantage in breaking the authenticated encryption scheme in the SUF-CMA game. And the advantage in breaking the security of the channel in the auth game is bounded by the advantage in breaking the authenticated encryption scheme in the SUF-CMA game. So basically, we can build a channel just from authenticated encryption, but there are channels with different properties. And there is a really interesting paper for everybody who wants to learn even more about cryptography. And this paper, first of all, introduces a very interesting perspective on how to define security. So we have had our five steps of defining security. And this particular paper by Rogoway and Sung goes much deeper into that. And it specifies and formalizes our approach of these five steps as indistinguishability up to correctness. And it exercises this systematic approach of defining security with secure channels. So if you want to look at that, these variants of stateful channels is discussed, as I said, by Rogoway and Tsang in their paper from Crypto 2018. And at least from my perspective, this is a very influential paper, although it doesn't have a lot of citations yet, but it is a very, very clean way of understanding how one defines security elegantly, and also summarizing a large corpus of literature on definitions and constructions of stateful channels. And so these variants include tolerated replay attacks, reflection attacks, reordering, and loss of ciphertexts. Then a stronger version that only tolerates reordering. And loss. And this is roughly what we capture here. Then only tolerating loss. And finally, only reliable delivery. And finally, before next week will just be about questions and answers, I want to at least sketch something about the security of channels under state corruption. So if we look back at the very first session of this course, we talked about why we are actually doing all of that. So the idea is that we look at protocols, we identify the building blocks, then we study how these building blocks are defined and built, and now we come back to these protocols. And one of the protocols was the double ratchet algorithm. And the idea of the double ratchet algorithm is to actually make sure that you have a secure channel and that the secure channel, first of all, provides confidentiality and authenticity for past messages, even if at some point the state is entirely leaked to the attacker, and it also recovers from a corruption such that even future messages can be secure again. And so what we want is that basically sometimes there are temporary attacks, but we want that even though there are attacks that leak the key material, so this here is insecure because state is corrupted. We still want security here, and this is what is called forward security. And we want security here, and this is what is called post compromise. Security. And if you remember how those things have been built in the double ratchet, the idea is roughly that for forward security, you just have to update your key material with a simple key derivation chain. So how you could do that is you, in our construction that we have seen before, you update the key step by step by whenever you send, you put your key into a pseudorandom generator, derive one key for encryption now, and another key such that in the next step, when you want to send again, you derive another key for the next encryption and the next key derivation. So you basically just have a deterministic step-by-step-by-step key chain that is based on pseudorandom generators. And pseudorandom generators are super, super cheap and simple. In order to get security even after your state is compromised, you need some form of asymmetric cryptography. And one way to do that is, and that's the way the double ratchet did that when it was invented 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, 15 years ago maybe, it used the Diffie-Hellman key exchange. Now, if we think back 1 week ago, Diffie-Hellman key exchange will not stay secure if we have quantum adversaries. And for that reason, there has been a lot of research about building post-compromise security also against quantum adversaries. And one way to do that, using key encapsulation mechanisms, so basically using black boxes. And that is one of the design principles that we use in cryptography to basically use modules. Black boxes that we combine together. We don't assume things that we don't need. And so for post-compromise security in the double ratchet or in the basically triple ratchet that is going to be deployed very soon in Signal, and a similar variant is already deployed in iMessage, PQ3, these protocols basically send a key encapsulation mechanism or use a key encapsulation mechanism to encapsulate a key to the partner. And when this key or when the ciphertext is received and used, the partner at some point generates a fresh chem key pair sends the public key back to me such that I can encapsulate to the party on the other side again. That's the rough idea how modern stateful channel protocols achieve those type of properties that are not captured by the construction that we've seen today. But final advertisement for the course next semester in the cryptographic communication protocols course, we will tackle how to do those things formally. So we define those things and we build constructions and we prove them secure. That's it content-wise in the introduction to modern cryptography for this semester. And next week, as I said, we will have a questions and answers session. So you are invited to look at the course material again, come up with questions, and I will try to answer them. If you don't have too many questions, I will just, or in any case, I think there will be enough time, I will go through the entire course again, give you a short summary, and that's basically it. So thank you very much for your attention. I hope you learned something, and I'd be very happy if those of you who are interested in that stuff at some point reach out to me and ask me for working together on theses or maybe at some point even a PhD. So thank you very much for your attention.